Welcome to Health Cetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. Well, today's program was to be a two-parter, but I became so engaged in my conversation with two terrific young men who had spent time at Rikers Island that I decided to give them more time to tell their stories and to hear from the director of an organization that supported them and others at Rikers Island during and after their release. Here is that interview. New York is one of only two states in this country that prosecutes and incarcerates youth as adults, including jailing them in New York City's Rikers Island facility. Today, there are about 5,000 young people between the ages of 16 and 21 who are held on Rikers Island. With New York City's history of police profiling, they are almost all youth of color who come from poor and lower middle income families and may suffer from depression and other mental health conditions. They are likely disadvantaged before they enter and become more so as they await trial. One ray of light in this system is the Friends of Island Academy that uses a model of youth advocacy to create a place where the youth can find a community of peers and advocates who will support them and believe deeply in their potential as they rebuild their lives after jail. Today on Health Cetera, I'm pleased to have three guests who know Friends of the Island Academy very well. Let me first introduce Christine Pahigayan, the Executive Director of Friends of the Island Academy, who has worked in juvenile justice advocacy for more than 30 years. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on Health Styles today.
Thanks.
Health Cetera.
Thank you, Diana.
We used to be called Health Styles. We are now Health Cetera. So I'm pleased that you're joining us on Health Cetera today. And thanks also for bringing to us two youth who have stories that they can share with us. I want to first introduce Zarin, who was released from Rikers Island in July. And Zarin, thank you so much for coming and congratulations on being released.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate it.
And we also have Mark Washington, who is now the Mentoring Program Coordinator for Friends. Mark, sounds like you've got a success story to share with us.
Yeah, I think so. Hope so.
Good. Well, look, let's start. I'd like to start with Zarin telling us your story about growing up and what led you to Rikers Island.
Well, I'll give you a little background information on myself. Truth be told, I grew up a sheltered child. My mom was a Jehovah's Witness. My father was Muslim. They never really got married, but that never really played a big factor in my life. I had both parents around. It wasn't until, I would say, 2003 when I lost both my parents is where I started to, I guess you can say, mentally becoming obsolete. I wasn't interested in things no more. I became a mute. I felt like I lost my place. I felt like I had no direction. After my parents passed away, I began to live with my brother, my older brother of 10 years. As I lived with him, he couldn't really be a brother figure to me. He didn't know anyhow how to raise a child. Mm. I was still a kid. I was, probably 13 years old. He's 23 at the time. He didn't know nothing about raising a child. So he thought being a father figure would mean something, but in fact, that really just pushed me away. As I started high school, though, I started to open up just a little bit more. Started meeting friends in high school and whatnot. And so to speak, I became more in tune with my surroundings. I started following other kids in high school. And I'll be honest with you, I was following at first. I was being a follower. I was a quiet boy who didn't know much about the streets. And that wasn't my stilo. That wasn't something that I was interested in or used to or exposed to until that time. I didn't have nobody to stop me from, you know, getting involved with certain things. And seeing that type of lifestyle, it interested me. It's something that called to me. I follow a couple of friends that, you know, they already grew up with on the side of things, and as I'm seeing how their lifestyle was going about, I wanted to be a part of that. Furthering on, I would say in about the year of 2007, as I started, you know, becoming more social and whatnot, that was the year where a lot changed for me. You can say that I joined the gang. Now, before we get more into that, please remember that, truth be told, a gang is portrayed the wrong way nowadays. Most people hear gang and they think violence, they think murder, they think a whole bunch of negativity. But in all reality, the roots of a gang was actually to protect the community. If you just a little background, one of the first gangs that, and most important, you can say, was the Black Panthers, and they did a lot. Now, they offered a sense of security. Everybody that was in that gang looked at each other as brothers. Everybody that was in that gang looked at each other as peers. Nobody was different from each other. Everybody respected each other. And they was not feared. They was welcomed. Now, when I joined my gang, I was interested in it because it offered me a sense of family. Everybody took me in. It didn't matter where you was from. It didn't matter who you was. You one of us now. We going to treat you like we're one of us. And it was, everything was fun and games at that time. Mm-hmm. Granted, you know, generations before me already did the gang thing, and see how some generations already turned out. But most little street crews didn't start off to be negative. It was a whole bunch of boys together, and they had their own little things to accomplish. And one goal my gang was interested in accomplishing was being self-sufficient, being independent, also knowing how to make executive decisions. That's what my gang was about. And no matter what part of the Bronx she was from, that's what she was interested in. Everybody earned the same respect no matter what, being part of that gang. I needed that sense of urgency. I needed that sense of brotherhood because I felt like I had no family, no background, no direction. So it called to me. But you know, over time, as gangs get larger and people come in with their own agendas and people already have, you know, hormonal backgrounds already and experience in certain aspects of life that, you know, some others didn't experience. You know, a lot of people could tell stories about, oh, I seen somebody was killed in front of my eyes and that changed my way of life and et cetera. But people bring that type of negativity into the gang, you know, it causes corruption. Anyway, most gangs, they start out, you know, from a neighborhood, and my neighborhood was one of them. My neighborhood was portrayed as a gang, and over time, it started becoming into a negative scene. You know, people started having, you know, difficulties with each other, having what we would call beef nowadays, where, you know, one guy don't like each other, and because we all together, and if my guy don't like you, then, hey, we got a problem with you and your things turn out for the worst, and, you know, things like that involves a conspiracy charge. That's what led to me going to Rikers Island, going to jail for a group, and
This is quite a story. I'm going to stop you for a moment. I'm really quite moved by your story. You faced incredible odds, and to lose your parents at the age of 13?
Yeah.
It must have been incredibly difficult. And so it seems, I mean, very understandable that you would look for community, and you found that community in the gang that you were a part of. So you get to Rikers Island, and what do you think?
I honestly never thought I would spend, or, you know, I heard stories of Rikers Island, oh, you know, it's crazy, people get cut, people getting beat up, oh, it's dangerous, and a whole bunch of, but I never actually ever put myself in shoes to think that I would actually end up there one day. There was times that I would see correction buses drive past my block, and I'd be like, stupid people, that's what you get for doing dumb things. Mm. And now I'm on that same correction bus. Mm. And as I get to Rikers Island, I'm not going to be completely honest with you, the first thing I felt was fear. What is going to happen to me here? How long am I going to be in here? How do you survive in this gladiator school? Mm. That's what it was had a name for. Because the reason it's called gladiator school, or portrayed to us as that, is because it's a lot of youth there. And everybody of the same age, people going at each other, just as I explained to you how gangs go at each other. Everything, you know, turns out for the worse. So it's a form of extreme violence that's going on Rikers Island, and I'm there, and I don't want to partake in that. That was my first notion. But at the same time, now you got to figure out if you're going to be there for a while. How am I going to adapt to the situation?
Yeah.
And honestly, what jail is for is for reform. It's supposed to help you become a better person, understand whatever crime you commit, and, you know, think it over, learn how to do better, not make the same decision. But being in that type of environment, young people with no proper guidance, that's not going to happen, especially if everybody around you has the same mentality as you, especially if everybody around you is your peer. Nobody, you don't have no wisdom. We're all young. We're all, you know, going down for dumb things, or, you know, getting caught up in things that, you know, you don't really expect the young kid to do. So now I'm in that type of setting, and I'm there for a while. 1 month go by, your fear goes away. 2 months go by, you start to realize, okay, I'm going to be here for a while. 3 months go by, you start panicking because you realize you're losing time. You're losing time of your life that you're not going to get back. So what do you do in the meantime? Yeah, you can study on your case, see what you can do to help yourself, because ain't nobody else going to help you. Again, you're only in there with your peers. Ain't no wisdom going around. Lawyers can only do so much. They're not in there. They're not experiencing what you go through. It's really a living hell. So with that being said, after time goes by, you start to try to figure out how to be a prey or a predator. You don't want to be a predator, but you don't want to be no one's prey. You start to figure out, how do I adapt to this type of environment without putting myself in a situation where I'm the one that has to act. I'm the one that has to become a violent person. You don't want to be that type of person, especially if that's not who you were before you came in.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you were there for how long?
I was there for 16 months.
Oh, my gosh. Now, were you there awaiting trial, or were you there because you'd had your trial?
I was there awaiting trial. I was fighting my case, and I was hoping that, honestly, I would the case would be thrown out or dismissed before trial.
And you had a public defender?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I had an 18B lawyer. One thing about DAs and lawyers, when they feel that they have maybe an ignorant child that doesn't know better in their possession, they're going to do whatever it takes to get their conviction. A DA, that's all they're worried about. They don't worry about the after effects of what happens to that child afterwards. All they care about is their conviction, their conviction rate, and what goes up. So they start to manipulate you. They instill fear in you. Hey, you know if you go to trial, you can get 15 years to life. You know that, right? Mm. You know what it is to tell somebody who's between the ages of 16 and 21 they can face up to 15 years or life in prison? Mm. In that same environment that they're in right now, they're going to have to stay there for another 15 years or more? You start having panic attacks. You start having bad dreams, cold sweats. You start having stress. That's a mental, it causes a mental breakdown. Mm. I've seen a lot of other inmates in there that snapped. Mm. Then I've also seen a lot of inmates in there that realized, okay, if this is what it is, I'm going to make the worst out of it. Mm. And when I say the worst out of it, they think it's their best. But in reality, they regressed into the worst type of animal. Mm. They're an animal now. They're a beast. Mm. They don't care about nothing else. Hey, I'm about to do 15 years. I don't care about nothing no more. I don't even care about this case. I don't care about nobody's life in here. Whatever I have to do to survive, I'm going to do what I have to do. And so most people do, and you begin to think about getting home, so you may want to, you know, cop out, which is take a plea, take a deal, and that's how they manipulate you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go to trial, you get 15 to life, but you know, if you take this sentence we give you, 2 to 3, 3 to 5, 2 years flat, a 1 to 3. Hey, you know, you'll be home in no time.
I mean, wanted to add something quick.
Yes, Mark
it's very
Washington.
Interesting mm-hmm. that in this system that you get penalized for using your constitutional rights. Mm. Right? Like, there's a, like if you use your constitutional rights and go to trial, this is what's going to happen. You know what I mean? So, like, this whole system is rigged against the people. And to be very honest with you, there are millions of stories like Zarin's in New York City and in this country.
It's really quite disturbing. Very disturbing. So Chris, so how did you connect with friends of Island Academy?
You said Chris, but I think you meant
I'm
Zarin,
sorry.
Right?
I'm sorry, Zarin. No, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's all right.
We're all one here.
Right. As I'm in there for a while, and I'll be honest with you, I started to, you know, adapt to my surroundings. I'm using my form of my gang intelligence, and I'm moving in ways that would, you know, keep me under the radar, but also not become a prey, a victim. If you haven't heard about the recent change on Rikers Island, where there's been a lot of slashings now and stuff, that's one thing that's big to avoid. And I just want to throw in there, I feel for people that go in there for a temporary time and have to leave with a lifetime scar.
Mm. Yes.
And that's a lot of what's going on, a lot of gang violence. The jail is ran by gangs. And not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, because, you know, like I explained earlier, what gang is not what it's supposed to be portrayed as. It's what people make of it now, of the violence. Mm. Usually it could have been there to protect people from getting wrongfully beaten by officers or not getting their proper, say, religious services, getting their food and et cetera. That's what it could have instilled while in the prison facility. Mm. Now it's all about who got power, people only respect violence in there. Mm. More or less, as I'm in there and I'm fighting for my case, I'm fighting for my life on a daily basis. I was able to stay in the arena, so I joined some programs to keep me active, keep me busy, keep me away from a lot of the things that would influence me to do negativity. And one of those places was Friends of Island Academy. One of their dorms that they had, officers that even though I was above the age to participate, I was able to work there. And because I was portrayed to officers, he's quiet or whatever the case may be, I was able to get a job there. As I'm working there and I see how they interact with, you know, most inmates, the younger inmates, and how they're helping them, I was interested to be wanted to know if maybe I can receive the same help or maybe I can help them, because I was starting to understand why certain inmates act the way they act and why certain inmates do the actions they do. And I figured, hey, maybe I can give it a shot. Hey, maybe let me get involved and let me see if I can learn what they're learning and maybe I can help them out at the same time. So as I'm that, I met a great, great person there. He goes by the name of Messiah Rankinson, one of the fellow fellow proctors of Friends of Island Academy. He was one of the first people that actually allowed me to open up. He sat down with me, talked with me, got my history, gave me his, and we made a bond, we made a connection. Afterwards, he was allowing me to work with him. He was actually assignments to keep my mind active, get my mentality working. He was actually keeping me on my toes, keeping me, you know, interested in actually wanting to go home. Because being in there for a while, you lose yourself. Like I said, jail is to help you reform. But after you done realize your crime and after you done realize what you can do to better yourself, once you pass that stage, you're going to think about, you're going to start panicking again. You're going to, okay, I learned my lesson, but why am I not going home yet? Now you start having fear again. You don't need that negative because that's what causes you to do things that you don't usually do. That's what causes you to turn into a monster that you don't want to be.
So friends really helped you to sort of keep a sense of strengths of yourself.
My sanity.
I'm sorry, what?
They helped me keep my sanity.
Yeah.
But I was there for 16 months. I was on the brink of losing it all. They helped me keep my form of sanity, keep my same persona. They didn't let me lose my characteristics.
And
when you're in there, I want to explain something. When you're a teenager, when you're a young adult in these facilities, there, you have to kind of portray something that you're not. Sometimes you have to walk the halls with a tougher demeanor, just so people don't try you, so people don't press you, people don't think you're soft and try to get over you, extort you, take your things, etc. You do this to survive, but if you do it for too long, you start believing that's your character. You start thinking, you are this tough guy, I am this, I'm the one that does this and that and that, when that's not really who you came in as, that's your persona. Once you your own self, you're gonna be what you thought you had to protect yourself. You can't be released from prison still portraying that thing, that demeanor. You're not gonna be able to function in society. Why do you think they put people in 50-man dorms or 30-man cells to see how you could function around other men? But if you're gonna always carry that demeanor, you're not going to be able to function with that type of characteristic. It's not going to work in the real world. Being locked up in 2015 is a whole different animal from back in the days. And sadly, it's not what, like, back in when Rikers Island was crazy in 93 or 94 or whatever the case may be. These are young kids doing this. These are people under the age of 21.
And Zarin, how old?
I can just add that was the case in 93 because I was there in 93. So the more things have changed, the more they stay the same. It's essentially the same age group, the same cohort, the same behavior. It's nothing has changed. Some things have changed. There's more technology in regards to the corrections, Department of Corrections. And, you know, you have clicks now, where back in the days we just ran the phones, but it's essentially the same thing. Everything that Zarin described, it was true in 93.
So let me just stop for a moment and remind listeners that you're listening to Health Cetera. I'm Diana Mason, and I'm here with Christine Pahagian and Mark Washington, and you've been hearing the story of Zarin, who was released from Rikers Island last July. And Zarin, how old were you when you were released?
I was 24.
24. And
I was 22.
22. So it's clear to me that you are one wise young man. I'm really quite moved by your story and by your perspective and your understanding of what takes place and what it takes to hold your center as a person when you are at Rikers Island or incarcerated anywhere. I'm wondering, Mark, if since you've also had experience with Rikers Island, let's go to your story. Tell us about your experience. You said you were there in 93 and 94.
No, just 93.
93.
Yeah, my story, I mean, Zarin's story and my story, it's a little different, but there are, you know, in the community, there are these factors that kind of help people decide whether they're going to be in the streets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My particular situation was that my older brother was very involved in the streets, and I got involved in the streets to prove that I could be like him. Mm-hmm. And since then, ultimately, I got arrested. I sold drugs the whole way through high school, which actually saved me from getting arrested, because I was very persistent about being in school. But eventually, when I graduated, I became a full-time hustler, stood outside 18 hours a day selling crack into the community, in the community. Eventually, I went to jail, and I was 90% of people on Rikers Island don't have their high school diplomas. Mm-hmm. At least it was true when I was there. But I was part of the 10% who did have my diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And like Zarin described earlier, you know, having to navigate, how am I going to get through this? When am I getting out of here? It's exactly how Zarin described it. But for me, I knew that I didn't belong there when, like I said, I was part of the 10% who had my diploma, who had a diploma already, and I got packed up to a housing unit that didn't do anything all day. They just stayed inside. Well, actually, they stayed inside because they did what was called popping off. Like, popping off is when one house just jumps off on another house. So one house is going to play basketball and the other house is coming from lunch and the other house is bored or angry or somebody has problems from this house or that house and then the whole house jumps off. So I was in that house that didn't leave because of those circumstances, and I just couldn't take it. I literally was going crazy. And because I was...
So when you say you didn't leave, you mean you were never outside?
Well, yeah, because that you didn't leave the dorm.
Wow.
They brought the food to them, everything. I just couldn't take it in there. So because of a relationship with one of the correction officers, he put me in a program house, and in the program house, I managed to was able to go to school every day. And going to school every day really helped my time go by. I was only there for 6 months. I wasn't there for an incredible amount of time. But being involved in the school floor, like helping the teachers help the young people learn, is what was my aha moment when I realized that, Mark, you are the streets. You can do more than the streets. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, when I got moved to C-76, which is the housing unit for people who are sentenced to a jail year or less, I met Friends of Island Academy and Clinton Lacey, and that was the start of being introduced to my first functional family.
Mm-hmm. And today you're the mentoring program coordinator for Friends.
For a program named Arches, which is actually the irony of it, that Clinton Lacey became one of the deputy commissioners of probation in New York City, and was very, very influential in developing and growing this program, Arches, that we dreamed about when we first thought about helping people in a more long-term way.
So I'm going to come back to that. I want to go next. Thank you for sharing that story. I'm clearly another wise man. So, and it's also clear that friends really made a difference in your life as well as in Zarin's life. So let me go next to Christine Pahigian. Christine, tell us about the Friends of Island Academy. How did it get started, and where is it today? What does it do today?
Friends was actually, it was born on Rikers Island. The name that we have is derived from the fact that in the 1980s, you know, earlier you heard Zarin and Mark both talk about how nothing has changed.
Yeah.
And in many respects, that's exactly right. But one of the things that is very different was in the late 80s and early 90s, sort of on the back of the crack years, on any given night, there were about 23,000, 24,000 people every night on Rikers Island. And of those 23,000, 24,000 people, close to 4,000 of them were adolescents, people between the ages of 16 and 18 years old. And because of that sheer volume, through a combination of community advocacy and the threat of litigation, the city of New York had to put a school at the jail because we were busy locking up so many young people who were supposed to be in school. The city placed an alternative high school on Rikers Island that was run by the then Board of Education. And it was called the Austin McCormick Alternative High School, but everybody called it Island Academy. And Island Academy operated like any alternative high school, except that it was inside of a jail complex. And it operated in the several buildings where young people were housed, where people 16 to 18 or 16 to 21 were housed. Friends of Island Academy grew out of, we would see kids like a Mark and like a Zarin, who would come every day to school and who would sort of each day do better and better and more and more, and they would leave with very high hopes for themselves to never, ever go back in there again, and we for them. And then within 3 or 6 months, they were right back in the same classroom in the same jail. And it was that revolving door that planted the seed for the creation of what we named Friends. I say we. It wasn't. It was a group of, this band of people created Friends of Island Academy. And the idea was that we would start on Rikers, on the school floors, getting to know young people in the way that Clinton came to know Mark 20-something years ago, in the way that Messiah came to know Zarin. And just that interaction, that relationship is key to helping someone, one of them said it, I think it was Zarin, find that aha moment. It was Mark. You know, they're one of the common denominators in this work, whether it's here at Friends or someplace else, is the relevance of the relationship. Everybody needs a somebody. So when you talk to programs locally and nationally, effective programs that work with young people or at-risk young people, that's one of the key common denominators is you hear everybody say, well, it was this guy, it was that lady, it was this one person who believed in me and made me see. And, you know, from there the organization has grown. We're now 26 years old. Our core, the sort of very being of who we are and how we started hasn't changed. We still, you know, we have staff who go on island, we get to know young people while they're there, and we leverage those relationships as sort of the bridge to having them come to us on the outside. It's very rare in that circumstance that kids are not mandated to come to us. You know, there's no court saying to them, you have to go to Friends when you get out or else. There's no parole entity saying that. It's strictly the leverage for us is the relationship. So on the outside, when for example, Zarin came home, Zarin knew that Messiah would be available to him if he needed help with this or that thing. By the same token, if Zarin was not Zarin, but more like some of our other young people, but younger, 16, 17, 18, who might not make that first phone call. Messiah knows what their phone number is, and Messiah knows, or Mark knows, or any of us who works here knows where to find them. So then we say, hey, remember me? I saw you last Tuesday inside, and I know that you want to do X, Y, Z. Come on, meet me at McDonald's. Let's talk. And so it's that relentless outreach, in a way, that tries to pull kids into us so that they can move forward. Like, we know, one of the things we know is that in order for kids to thrive, kids anywhere, children, kids anywhere on Earth, in order to thrive, they need a sense of belonging. They need opportunities to achieve. They need people to have high expectations for them. And that's sort of who we are and what we do. And we try to get at it in any conceivable way that we can. We also expect, because most of our young people are coming out of a jail, we know that it's not going to be so easy. We know there's going to be sort of five things go wrong before the one thing goes right. So it takes a lot of time. And we're not a program that runs for a set period of time. We don't say, come here, and then in 6 months you leave. We say, this is the door. Here's your ID. You are with us for life. However long it takes, this door is always open to you.
So let me just remind listeners, you're listening to Health Cetera on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. I'm Diana Mason, and I'm talking with one person you just listened to, Christine Pahigian, who is the executive director of Friends of Island Academy and has worked with juvenile justice advocacy for more than 30 years. And early on, you heard the story of Zarin, who was released from Rikers Island last July and is building his life. And you also heard from Mark Washington, who is now mentoring program coordinator with a program affiliated with Rikers, I assume, or I'm sorry, with Friends called Arches. Is that right, Mark?
Yes, it's a Department of Probation program.
And tell us,
transformative mentoring program.
So tell us a little bit about that program.
Well, like we were saying, when Friends was in its infancy, there was a youth leadership component to Friends, and we would go around the city and talk to young people about, you know, the myths of jail and how we were living better ultimately now. And then we dreamed about creating a program where we would be able to actually, like, kind of give people some resources to decide, to try something different, to try a different life. And that's what the transformative mentoring process is, that the young people get a little stipend to come to groups and workshops with us. Mm. But it's not really about the stipend so much as it's about, it's just like what Chris said earlier, it's about the relationship. What they get when they join the program is they get a mentor that they have access to. So we meet with them in groups. And in addition to that, their mentor is charged with spending at least 1 hour a week with them outside of the group.
And how do you find the mentors?
Well, people that, you know, from doing the work, you know, we know who are, like, the term we use are, like, credible messengers, people who have overcome these things and are living their life a certain way. Because a lot of people have overcome this stuff, but just because you've overcome these issues doesn't mean that you are in a place to help other people overcome their issues,
yes.
Right? So it has to be the right person.
Yes. So,
right? Like, if you... I'm sorry.
So there are people who have been incarcerated and have experienced trying to rebuild a life.
They don't have to be have been incarcerated. They can just be anyone who wants to help people. But if they have been incarcerated, if they know this story, you know, they have a personal story and how they overcame it and how they're walking it now, then it works. But they don't have to have been. Incarcerated to be a mentor,
so
to care.
So, Chris Pahigian, tell me, what's the recidivism rate for people who are part of Friends, who use the services, compared to those who don't? Do you know?
It fluctuates year over year. Mm-hmm. For kids who are engaged for a minimum of 9 months, it hovers around the low 20% range for readmission, which is, as compared to the going rate, for young males, which is about 46%.
Mm. And so, where do you get your funding from?
A combination of places. We have government funding that's both local and state and federal, different grants to do different things. And then we're perpetually soliciting private foundations and individual donors. Here at Friends, we call it the money dance.
Yes.
Now, Miss Chris, if you wouldn't mind, I would like to elaborate on how, you know, important you guys' work is, because a lot of people may still not get the gist of the psychological effect that jail has on you know, teenagers and young adults such as myself. And I just wanted to, you know, take like a little 2-3 minutes to elaborate on that real quick.
Yes.
On Rikers Island as a kid or as a young adult, you really do experience, I'm going to give you a perfect example of just a simple one day in hell. Gang-related or not gang-related, like I said, the jail is highly populated with gangs. And if you're not gang-related, here's the influence that you get on you. When you enter any type of housing area in any facility on Rikers Island, the first thing they want to know is, are you banging, which is asking you, are you gang-related? If you aren't associated with a gang, you're not a gang affiliate, you're prone to getting extorted. They have things called, you know, things that where they how they run the phones. You may not even get to use the phone. When you go to commissary, you may get your commissary taken from you. Officers can't stop that. This is done by, households.
They can't or won't.
They can't. They don't know who's doing it. Mm. They don't know who's gang-related, who's not. It's hard for them to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
So you being one young person who you probably made a mistake outside and now you're in this facility, this is a day in hell for you because now you can't use the phone to call your family. You're getting extorted for that. Mm-hmm. Now you're getting extorted for whatever food you have. Now, on the flip side, if you are gang-related, such as I was, when you are a known gang affiliate, you get placed in houses where it's nothing but gang members. Now you're on 24/7 watch. You cannot leave that household without supervision. Anything that happens in that jail, they lock your house down.
Mm.
This is what they called SRG houses, security risk group houses for gang affiliates and gang members. Anything that was related to a gang incident that happened in jail, a slashing or whatever, they locked your house down first. You cannot come out to your cell. That is torture to know that all you have is to your toilet and your bed.
Mm.
If it wasn't for me being available to, if it wasn't for Friends of Island Academy building, I couldn't have left that household no matter what. That was my ticket out. That was my way of being able to walk the hall and get to an area where I'd be safe, an area where I'd be free within that type of society. Like, if they wasn't there, I couldn't leave that household. I'd have to suffer in there. In heat, in cold, it didn't matter.
So, Zarin, let me ask you, how did your fellow gang members regard your wanting to, or your actually being, working in the program, the Friends program, and being able to leave?
It's funny because that kind of changed me from at one point being a follower to a leader, because now I was able to draw people to be interested in coming to Friends Island again. Oh, yo, bro, what they do for you there? Oh, how you get in there?
Uh-huh.
Yo, can I come? You think they could pull me down? Now I'm bringing, as you can say, I'm bringing more clientele, people that's coming down interested and wanting to know, even if they just want to get out the house, now they want to see what it's about. Now they want to see how the kids can help. If it wasn't for the person I consider my dear brother, Messiah Rinkasu, if he didn't keep me motivated to stay on my case or pursue my whatever dreams I had, don't give them up, he made sure to stay on my toes every time I came down to that area.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, did you work on your financial goals of when you leave this place? He was so sure that I was leaving. I was not going to be in jail forever. Me, I didn't know. I was expecting to go upstate for 1 to 3. But because of Friends of Island Academy advocating for me,
mm-hmm.
I was able to come home.
That's awesome.
I got time served.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting to go to court that day to be sentenced to a 1.5 to 3.
Wow. Wow.
I got time served 1.5 because of my participation in that program.
So, Zarin, what are you doing today? What do you want in life these days? And where are you in life these days?
Okay, I can get to that. Now, all the goals that I worked on while I was in there, all my plans, had them laid out. Hey, I want to open up a temp agency because as I see how the youth was doing, I wanted to be able to help them as well, do something the same way as Friends of Island Academy is helping. But when I came home, I really had nothing to do. Like, everything that I had went out the window. Mm-hmm. Everything that I had planned was not going as planned. So the day I came home, mm-hmm. I had nowhere to live. I had nowhere to turn to. Mm-hmm. I had no type of income. I had nothing. If it wasn't for having the connection with these guys that, yo, listen, as soon as you get out, call me, I honestly probably would have ended up back in jail for doing something stupid to survive,
mm-hmm.
trying to make a little income.
Mm-hmm.
They brought me here to our academy. They showed me, listen, we're going to help you get a job, something that could sustain a substantial income. We're going to help you get a place to live. And even though I took it one day at a time, they definitely helped me get there. Now I'm living in my own space. I'm working a full-time job. They're helping me planning on going back to school to do social services.
Great.
Eventually, I plan on opening up a temp agency, and they already helped me draw up this business plan of mine from when I was incarcerated. So things is working out slowly but surely. But without them, I'd be still stuck.
What an incredible story. And I have no doubts that you'll succeed. I think you're an awesome young man. And I commend you for, you know, sort of holding tight to who you are, holding on to that, who the core Zarin is, and trying to keep that positivity moving forward. Good for you. Good for you. And we've only got a few minutes left, and so I wanted to make sure that we have an opportunity to tell listeners who, you know, may be quite moved by your story, Zarin, and yours, Mark, and the work that you're doing, Chris. And I'm wondering how the public can be supportive. What would be helpful? Let's start, Chris, with the website for Friends of Island Academy. What is that website so people can get more information?
It's friendsny.org.
Friendsny.org. Great. And
if you can navigate your way through that website, and somewhere on there are opportunities both for, you know, there are all kinds of ways that people can be helpful to us and to our work. Young people need work. Young people need jobs. Young people need housing, tutoring, and the organization is always in need of funds to keep our doors open so that kids can keep thriving. And a lot of that you can go right to our website and click on the donate button on the resource front, or there's a place in there you can navigate to about opportunities to volunteer.
So that's friendsny.org.
I mean, for me, like, to Chris's point about the funds, like our program, it cost us maybe like, I think, $5,000 a year to do what we do with a young person, approximately.
Mm-hmm. New York. This is Arches. This is Arches.
No, this is Friends.
Oh, this is Friends. Friends. Okay.
Arches is a program of Friends. It's one of the programs that we operate.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. New York State spends approximately $12,000 a year to educate a kid. New York City spends approximately $40,000 a year for one year at Rikers Island.
Mm.
New York State spends $60,000 a year for one year up north.
Mm-hmm.
And for juvenile detention, one year in juvenile detention, New York State spends over $200,000 a year.
Oh, my gosh.
So what we need is we need the community to become aware of this, right? You know what I mean? So, like, we need these funds that the system and society that get spent on incarcerating people with no regard need to be invested in the community.
So the state budget is coming up for approval. So we're recording this on March 24th, and it has to be done. The state budget has to be done by March 31st. Chris or Mark, do you know if your funding from the state is what it ought to be, or are you having to fight for to save every penny?
Chris would be the better person to answer that.
Okay.
You know, I think that more and more. And this isn't necessarily about Friends of Island Academy, but more and more legislators and policymakers are recognizing what a ridiculous waste of money it is to incarcerate and how much more important it is to divert those dollars and put them into the kind of work that we do. So I think from a broader perspective, you know, I have been, as you said earlier, I've been doing this work for 30 years, and I have on and off been involved with Friends since its inception. This is the first time in history that our organization and our sister organizations are finding the level of openness to what we do in our work. What has to happen now is that the dollars have to follow that openness. And I think we're going to see that a little bit. I just hope that we see it in the same kind of level as you see. You know, to put it a different way, we spend hundreds of million dollars in correction. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars in enforcement. Mm-hmm. We have uniformed armies inside of jails. We have uniformed armies on the street in the spirit and name of public safety. But we don't have an army of advocates. Mm-hmm. We have a handful of advocates. Yeah. And so that dynamic needs to be completely inverted, or at least equated. So if we're going to make a dent in this, we have to invest equally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just sort of, you know, change it up.
Well, into that.
Yes, and I might point out that there is a growing shift in policymakers on both sides of the aisle, their attitudes towards criminal justice and reform. So the timing might be right, but it certainly would be helpful to have the public speaking up whenever possible to say it's criminal how we are treating our youth, and we've got to change what we're doing. I want to thank all three of you for coming on to Health Cetera today. I've been quite moved. I was going to make this a short interview. It's going for the whole program because your stories are so compelling, and your stories highlight what is wrong with the system and what it takes to help youth who are incarcerated to rebuild their lives. So let me first thank Christine Pahigian for coming on today and for helping me to be able to talk with these two young men today. Christine Pahigian is the executive director of Friends of Island Academy, and that web address is www.friendsny.org. Christine, thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you, Diana.
And you also heard from Mark Washington, who is the mentoring program coordinator for ARCHES, a program, support program for youth who are released from jail that's part of Friends. And Mark, thank you so much for sharing your own story and for the really good work you're doing. It's really important work, as I think you know and believe, and I commend you for doing it. So thanks so much for sharing that today.
Thank you for having us, and I, again, just would like to thank Zarin for being the reason why you get up some days. Some days at work, it gets really hard to come to, but when you see them trying their best to be successful, it makes you want to get up and do it. So thank you, Zarin, brother. I appreciate what you're doing, and we thank you. Quickly, Ms. Wilson, you know, I mean, just want to say this. It would be awesome if WBAI thought it was in the community's best interest to have young people like Zarin on the radio.
Well, I think it's a great idea, too. And years ago, this program, Health Cetera, when we were Health Styles, had a youth program called Youth Pulse. So we will follow up on that. And you'd make a great team, actually. And let me now thank Zarin myself. Zarin, you are a phenomenal young man. I have high expectations of you, actually, and would welcome hearing how you do when you build that temp agency. Please do get back in touch, and let's talk about the work that you're doing. My hat goes off to you for keeping your core and keeping positive. You're a fabulous young man. Thank you for coming on today.
I want to thank you for the opportunity, for allowing me to tell my story and tell the story of others that's going through the same thing probably right now. And just thank you for giving me the voice to for other people to understand what's really going on out here.
Yeah. Well, my thanks to all of you, and to our listeners, I hope that you will go onto the website friendsny.org and look to either volunteer or to provide a donation to this important organization and to lend your voices to advocating for more funding for this program and others like it that are supporting youth before they go into a place like Rikers Island, as well as when they are released, when they're there and when they're released. So you've been listening to Health Cetera on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. You've been listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, or streaming at www.wbai.org. Have a great afternoon.